The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now, it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Good morning to you, 5 minutes past nine, Thursday the 15th of June. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio, and we've got so much lined up for you. We're going to be previewing the rally with Oisín Kelly. Interesting to see a few stages down the south of the county as well. Some brilliant routes down there. We've got some live music for you. We're going to give you away a €100 quiz. We've made some tweaks to it for Thursday. One of you is going to win a €100 one for all voucher. And then we're going to keep you across all the main stories of the day. So it is a true magazine show. There's something for everyone out there. So get involved, have your say, pass on your stories, your positive experiences, whatever you want to talk about, really. 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000. The WhatsApp and text number is now open. Give us a call on 07491 25000. Caroline taking your calls, Neve on the show as well, of course. And if you want to email, it's comments@highlandradio.com. Right, okay. We've a lot to get through, as I mentioned, so let's get through, or let's have a look at the front and inside some of the newspapers today. And if anything, as we go through, this is something that you want to comment on, feel free to just take your phone out and drop that text. The Donegal News. Rally fans arriving in the county ahead of this weekend's Donegal International Rally are being warned to expect a zero-tolerance approach from Gardaí, who will be out in force over the 3 days. The Garda operation will be boosted by the presence of the Garda Air Support Helicopter. While it's been confirmed that Letterkenny District Court will sit this weekend, if required, three sittings they have available to them, we were told on the Garda information item on Tuesday. And with thousands of visitors gathering for the eagerly anticipated event, local hostelries and hotels have long been booked out with accommodation at a premium. Donegal County Council's newly appointed road safety officer, Chris Harley, has appealed to rally fans to stay safe. "We appeal to all rally fans to be cautious, use the road responsibly, and be courteous to all road users." On to the Donegal Democrat this morning. And sexual crime and domestic incidents in Donegal are on the rise. On Garda Síochána Conas, Divisional Protective Service Unit in Donegal currently has 177 open investigations. That's about one in every 1,000 people, which is really quite remarkable, isn't it? A rate of one in 1,000, not far off it. So far in 2023, there have been 54 instances of sexual crime reported in Donegal. There have also been 411 domestic instances raised this year. They're getting up to 2 to 3 cases per 1,000 people there. Again, just when you look at it like that, it's the numbers are high, aren't they? The specialised DPSU investigates sexual crime, domestic abuse, child sexual exploitation, incidents of child neglect and human trafficking. The unit was established in 2020 and is based out of Letterkenny Garda Station under the direction of Detective Inspector Siobhan Mullahan. Let's get on to the Tyrconnell Tribune now, and you may have seen videos of young people fighting in Milford. They were circulating, as these things tend to do, across social media now, WhatsApp and other platforms. It's covered in the front of the Tyrconnell Tribune today. Garda sources have confirmed they are investigating an alleged assault in the Convent Road area of Milford last Thursday. Garda sources were responding to a query from the Tribune seeking clarification on much more serious flash fights elsewhere in the town some hours earlier involving numbers of teenaged girls. The matter was raised with the paper by local residents who said what happened was dangerous and disgraceful and could have had much more serious consequences. In all, three instances were filmed on mobile phones. Teenagers caught on camera trading punches, legs and knees flailing and kicking, hair and fists flying as they attempted to overcome one another in what were described as violent scenes of assault in public places. And there was some there that weren't teenagers as well. It needs to be put to an end. Awfully distressing, that, for the young people, whether you're perhaps even arguably the aggressor, but particularly if you're the victim, heading into next school term with that hanging over you, wondering if it's going to happen again. It's a horrible way to go to school. Everyone has to work together to stamp that out, to get rid of it. It's very disruptive to the young people and to the local community. The Derry News now. A decision to arrest a Derry woman on the suspicion of organised crime has been condemned. Earlier this week, a 27-year-old was arrested by officers from the PSNI's Paramilitary Crime Task Force. The PSNI said the woman had been arrested on suspicion of being concerned in the supply of a Class B controlled drug as part of a proactive investigation linked to the INLA. The woman's solicitor, Kieran Shields of Madden and Fanucan, condemned the operation, which is kind of almost unique to this part of the world. You just don't see that in another city in Ireland, do you, where you'd have a solicitor releasing press releases off the back of arrests. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, it's just kind of not something you generally see too often elsewhere, but it is something you do see with some regularity here in the Northwest. Interesting story in the Irish Independent this morning. Explosive claims of Garda collusion in the distribution of drugs have been made in the High Court. A judge has heard allegations that a number of Gardaí supervised the importation of drugs and controlled the flow of shipments to dealers. A detective sergeant, who later rose to a senior rank and is now retired, was identified in an affidavit as being centrally involved. The affidavit was sworn by a person claiming to have worked in the drugs trade under the supervision and instruction of An Garda Síochána, who controlled what drugs got to what dealers. Details of the allegations, which relate to the period between 1997 and 2014, were outlined in a ruling in which a judge allowed an affidavit to be admitted in a civil action against the Garda commissioner by Jack Doyle, a former Garda stationed in Blarney, County Cork, who claims he was forced to retire after raising his concerns. Shocking story there. Not great news in the latest opinions polls for either Sinn Féin or Fine Gael, though Sinn Féin are in a position, I think, more to have a fluctuation than perhaps Fine Gael are. Support for Fine Gael and for Sinn Féin has slumped, while Fianna Fáil and the Social Democrats both see a boost in the latest Irish Times Ipsos opinion poll. Taoiseach Leo Varadkar also sees his personal rating fall sharply in a poll that's unlikely to ease nerves in Fine Gael. Now, at the weekend, there was a coordinated effort from within Fine Gael to get three negative stories on the front pages of three Sunday papers, and of course the media duly obliged. There was a parliamentary party meeting last night, which I would say was pretty tense. But anyway, it all is a little bit convenient, isn't it, that you have these hit pieces from within Fine Gael on the front of the papers, and now, just a couple of short days later, you have this opinion poll which shows a fall in support for Fine Gael. I am quite sure that they would have had an indication, perhaps as far back as last Sunday, we'll see where this poll was going. So the knives are certainly out for Leo Varadkar. Why do you think that he personally has lost 6 points in terms of satisfaction with him? He's still relatively high. He's not far behind Micheál Martin, well ahead of Eamon Ryan. But anyway, what do you think is going on there? Well, the findings come against the background of calls for tax cuts in the next budget to senior Fine Gael figures, including the Taoiseach, and amid continuing pressure in housing, health and the cost of living. Sinn Féin maintains a substantial lead over its rivals and remains the most popular party by some distance. However, party support has fallen to its lowest level in 2 years. So let's run through the figures here. Sinn Féin, 31%, Fine Gael, 18%, Fianna Fáil, 21%. The Green Party, 4%. So again, just to be absolutely clear where we're at here, if you add the current government parties together, you get 43% support, which is ahead of Sinn Féin's 31%, though of course they would coalesce with another party to get into government, at least one other party. So the Green Party are at 4%. They just sit there, don't they? They just sit there 1 point above the margin of error. They've always been there. Five, I think six is the highest I've ever seen. They would just sit there at 4% and are influential in government, which is proportional representation for you. Labour at 4%, again, they just sit there stagnant. The Social Democrats, 5%, they're up 3%. And they had a leadership change, so maybe that's reflected in this poll, though it wasn't reflected in the last one. Independent and others have 17%, which is kind of low when you think about it. We don't really analyse that too much. You know, there's not a great deal of support for non-party politics, really, is there? when Independents and others, which is Ain't Two, and which are a party, of course, and a few others, they just sit around about 17%. Okay, so we have a more positive page in the Irish Daily Mail for Leo Varadkar. He says, I can turn Fine Gael around, the Irish Daily Mail. The Taoiseach laid down the gauntlet to any potential Fine Gael leadership challenger last night, telling them to talk to his face and not to the media. At a private meeting with Fine Gael TDs and senators, Leo Varadkar said he was always available to address any discontent within the party directly. It comes after three Sunday newspapers reported that there was dissatisfaction within the party over Mr. Varadkar's stewardship, which it was claimed is no longer secure. The coordinated articles were described by one TD at the meeting as treachery. Fine Gael sources described the contribution from the Taoiseach as defiant. He made the point that he had seen what was in the papers on Sunday, and if anyone had things to say about the party's performance, they could say it directly to him, said one source at the meeting. But they don't want him to turn things around. They don't want him to approve things. Whoever is behind these hit pieces, they want him out. So they chop him down, chop, 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 to the point whereby he has to come out and protest that he will lead the party going forward, and then there's another stage then when the knives really start to come out. The Irish Farmers Journal this morning, Minister for Agriculture Charlie McConnell, a good friend of this show, has been given the green light to roll out a new €28 million beef welfare scheme aimed at suckler farmers. The Department of Public Expenditure and Reform cleared the €28 million funding required to replace the BEEPS scheme on Monday, the Irish Farmers Journal understands. An IBR herd testing programme and meal feeding pre- and post-weaning will be among the requirements of the scheme. Right, let us go to that sad story that's coming out of Sligo. And I think it's worth pointing out, if you don't mind if I do, that sometimes it's best to wait till you know the facts of a story before running it. And it was the so-called mainstream media that is supposed to be the reliable source of information that rushed out the news that it was two young people that were involved in this tragedy, which was incorrect information. And as I say, it's better not to be first, but to be accurate. And some were, the likes of Ocean FM, in fairness to them, they held off until they had the information, whilst national journalists were tweeting the fact that it was two young people in terms of teenagers, both are young. But this is the sad story in all the papers this morning. A woman died after she and her young niece were struck by a train in a horror collision in Sligo. Jessica McLaughlin, who has been named locally, was in her 40s and passed away after she was struck by an Irish Rail train at Ballisodare yesterday afternoon. Her niece, Rebecca, who's in her 20s, was also knocked down and was brought to hospital, where her condition was last night described as very serious. It's understood that both Jessica and Rebecca, who are from Sligo town, were out walking on the tracks when they suddenly saw the train coming and attempted to jump clear in time. However, tragically, the pair were both hit by the oncoming service, which was bound for Connolly Station in Dublin. And the driver did try to make them aware, reports this morning. And a horrific incident, not for the people involved, obviously, their families, but the train driver, the rest of the staff on the train, and the responders, the first responders there. An awful tragedy. The Sun tells us that Pope Francis is due to be released from hospital in the next few days after a three-hour operation. The pontiff, who's 86, had surgery to repair an abdominal hernia. Medics said it went well and are waiting for a mesh prosthetic to settle and attach properly. The Pope did not say his public noon prayer from the hospital balcony last Sunday to avoid having to stand for too long. His public and private audiences have been cancelled until this Sunday. A Vatican spokesperson said the Holy Father rested well. The medical team reports the recovery is proceeding without complications and are planning to discharge him in the next few days. The Pope, who traditionally takes all of July off, is due to visit Portugal in early August and then Mongolia. So the timing of the operation is good. I suppose it gives him more chance to recover. Now, lots of you are interested in the hate speech laws. There was some discussion in the Dáil yesterday. New hate speech laws will not, we're told, prevent people from expressing views, opinions or facts in artistic or political or cultural ways. That's according to Helen McEntee. The Justice Minister insisted yesterday the government is working to protect people from discrimination. She added, we're not preventing people from expressing views, expressing opinions, expressing facts, doing so for various different reasons, be it an artistic or political or cultural way. This is about the most extreme forms of where that language then turns into a hate crime. But who determines what's a fact? And we've seen over the last 3 or 4 years that that can be really quite confusing. We had information that was factual being suppressed en masse by, say, social media, for an example. So who is the truth police? So if they insist that you will be able to express truth, by whose definition is it the truth? Do you know what I mean? Where's the narrative? Where's the leaning? This is about the most extreme forms of where that language then turns into a hate crime, she said. I don't believe this will have a chilling effect. I think those cultural culture wars will continue no matter what you do. Okay, so that's just one side of it there from Helen McEntee. Just thought it interesting, but others still are not convinced with what she has to say. An increasing number of school leaders are taking action to ensure a phone-free learning environment. At least 50 secondary schools are expected to be locking up students' devices in bespoke pouches after the summer. Each morning, students will be asked to put their devices into their personal pouch, which locks automatically when closed. Okay, Siobhan Foster is principal of De La Salle College in Churchtown and joins us on the programme now. Good morning, Siobhan.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm good. What's the policy at your school currently or going forward?
Yeah, well, we have we want our school to be a phone-free learning environment. So basically, currently, the students, when they come into school, they're meant to turn the phone off before they come into the school yard, and then it stays off for the duration of the day. So that's basically the expectation. It's one of the school rules, and that is what we've been trying to implement over the last few years. And prior to, I suppose, the pandemic and the lockdown and the shift to online learning, there was very high compliance to that. And then the pandemic happened, and all of a sudden then the shift was that we asked all the students to put on their phones, put on their you know, mobile devices, or to go online and to be taught, you know, remotely using their phones or whatever laptops they had at home. And that was fine, and it worked really, really well. And as you know, mobile phones, you know, they have huge, they serve many, many positive purposes. But what happened then was they came back into school and we were saying, right, time now, turn off those phones. You're not going to be using them again, you know, during the school. So what we noticed, the first thing we noticed was the teachers reported to us just an increase in, you know, breaching of that rule, that there was more incidents occurring. And that was, you know, eroding teacher tuition time. And it was also affecting the real positive relationships that students and teachers have developed over time. You know, there's nothing worse than having to tell a child in the middle of the class, turn it off, it's interrupting the class. You know that they're distracted, it's affecting their concentration. So we, you know, certainly it was reported to me at staff meetings, and you'd even see it as well during break times. You'd have to approach students and say, listen, you can't have your phone out, it needs to be turned off, you're breaking school rules.
Yeah.
So that's what we certainly noticed, the difference between prior to the pandemic, when they actually, you know, they knew they had to turn it off and all the rationale was given to them, but they got so used to it, I think, over those 2 years during the lockdown and during the pandemic, that they, you know, it was much, much more difficult to them to adapt back to not having it out, or at least not having quick access to it, you know?
Yeah, and of course, even if it was in a bag and on silent, a lot of young people now have the watch on, so they'd be getting the notifications in any case too, and it's distracting.
Yeah, yeah.
This levels the playing field. It's a bit of a reset. And the difference here then, and are you going to employ these pouches, which effectively the student has the phone on their possession, but it renders it useless effectively until it's unlocked at the end of the school day?
Yeah, I mean, look, we want, I suppose what we did was we wanted to look at probably a more student, believe it or believe it not, a more student-friendly way of addressing this issue, you know, because we had a number of assemblies with all of the school, with all of the, each year in the school, and we were basically saying to the students, look, you know, we gave them the rationale, you know, you know, what, by being distracted by your mobile phones is affecting you academically. We saw it how it affects them socially. You know, they're not, you know, they don't communicate or chat as much with each other when they're on their phones. You know, they don't engage in the extracurricular activities that are offered to them at lunchtime or break times because they want to try and find a place in the field or whatever to catch up on what's happening on social media. And, you know, we also are very aware that it affects their mental health. You know, it is addictive, but also they're constantly influenced by what's happening in social media. And then there's also the inappropriate activity that can happen, you know, whether it's, you know, sending inappropriate messages or bullying or whatever it is. And we sort of highlighted those and made those very clear to them. We said, we have to look at ways to stop this, at least for the 6 hours that you're with us in schools. So we said, right, at the moment, you know, we were giving them the responsibility to turn it off. But as you rightly said there, Greg, they can put it on silent. Yeah. So in effect, we don't know, but they can hear it buzzing and the phones are alerting them. And they're just itching then to try and find out, well, who's contacting me, you know, all the rest. And that is a distraction.
I think it really gives them a break, though. You know, it gives them a break from that. What is that noise? Who is that? And has there been any resistance even? I'm thinking maybe from parents or guardians, you know, maybe helicopter parents, as you might call them, you know, that like to check in on the young ones at break time or lunchtime or even during class. Has there been any pushback? I mean, I would expect you to get some from students, you know, and you want them to have that sort of critical sort of, you know, interaction. But has there been anything from parents?
We sent parents out just a very, very simple, you know, sort of survey, just, you know, yes, no, do you want, you know, do you support a mobile free learning environment? And overwhelmingly, over 85%, and I can't remember the exact percentage, but overwhelmingly, they all said yes. Now, there was a small number, but when we asked them what was the reason was that their children needed that phone in terms of communicating with them to get home safely. And we could understand that. So what we then did was to explain to the students and to the parents what exactly this meant. This is different than us taking the phone from them. What it is it's giving the students the responsibility. They put the phones into the pouch. They hold on to those pouches throughout the whole day. They have that responsibility. And at the end of the day, then we have these devices at all the exits in the school, and they basically just tap it and it releases the pouches, opens the pouches, and they have their phones for going home. Mm-hmm. So once parents heard, no, it's not about us taking the phones from them. Now, if there's breaches of the rule and consistent breaches of the rule, and we're in the process of working and refining our policy at the moment around that, of course we have to look at, you know, confiscating the phones if there's, you know, repeated offences. But that will be done in consultation.
Yeah, but because there's a massive, everyone's the same, that becomes less likely. Do you know what I mean? Because I would imagine. So, and what about lunchtime? If they're heading down, certain students are allowed out at lunchtime, they can tap on the way out, presumably, so they have access. They can't.
We don't allow the students out at lunchtime. We've quite a short lunchtime break because we're sort of bang in the middle of the city. So we've 40 minutes for lunchtime. And it's just, we don't want them late for class, those reasons.
That's perfectly fine. But let's take it to a rural environment. Where it might be the mom. It's just like, I think that in terms of bullying and stuff, and I think you referenced this yourself, where fights might take place, where people are videoed in compromising positions, and I've seen that in toilets. You've not seen it, but, you know, I've heard of the reports out of schools, or that type of activity where people are compromised or videoed with or without their consent. It takes that out of it as well, which I think is really a good space. It protects the young people till they're back in the care of their parents as well. You know, I mean, it's dependent on the child, but I like that element of it.
Yeah, and one of the things that we did, because, you know, of course students and teenagers, I'm sure if you, any parent out there is a teenager, the most difficult thing to do at the minute is to get this, you know, your child to turn off that mobile phone. And worse, if you ask for a teen, teenager to hand up their mobile phone. It's like cutting off their hand. So that's the worst thing you can do. So what we try to do to is say to them, look, this is, you're taking responsibility for this. This is giving you a break. It's breaking that addiction. It's giving you that 6 hours of freedom where you will be a better student. You, and what we do now in lunchtime, like, we're hoping that there will be more students now that will get involved in the debate clubs and the chess clubs, you know, table tennis, outside playing, rather than running off to try and, because they won't be able to go off to a quiet place in the field to put on the phone because they won't be able to access it. You know? So that's,
And also, please, it's not just the teenagers, give them to their mums and dads at the cinema, in the theatre, at a meeting, at mass, at a funeral, at a wedding where they're asked to switch their phones off, and or on an aeroplane, and you know they don't because they're as addicted as their teenagers are. So maybe we can see more. And what about the cost of this finally, Siobhan? I'll let you go now shortly, very shortly.
Yeah,
but I mean, because I'd imagine, listen, it is a simple enough technology, but it's patented and the company want to make their money out of it. Is it, very expensive?
It is. Look, it works at approximately €18 per pouch, you know. So we're going to trial it this year and see how it goes. But I think it's a small price to pay. Like, this is a very low-tech solution to a high-tech problem. And, you know, €18 is, over the course of a whole year, is very little, I think, to invest.
Yeah.
You know, in this. So we, you know, come back to me in a year's time and check in with me and see how did it go, because we're only about to start this for real, I suppose, in September. We trialed it for the 3 days and, you know, it went surprisingly well. We did survey the students, say, well, how did you feel about that? 40% said they felt positive. 10% said they felt neither positive nor negative. You know, they were nonchalant about it. And about 50% said that they were negative about it.
Yeah, well, that's what
but
you want.
But we thought that that was
bad.
Really, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, no,
exactly,
not, yeah,
because
exactly.
It's a baseline for us. And of course, they're going to be resistant.
Now, if you do that in,
you know,
6 months and that 50 drops to 30, that actually really indicates we're onto something that goes beyond... beyond,
so it'll be an
education.
Interesting experiment,
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right, Siobhan, and I think it's good for parents, because I think if we could, because, you know, parenting is very, very tough, and if we could know, right, they're going to get 6 hours of a break from that bloody thing, it's good. All right, Siobhan, thanks for all your time this morning. Really appreciate it.
No bother, a pleasure. Thank you.
Take care. Siobhan Foster, Principal at De La Salle College in Churchtown in Dublin. What do you think? Is that something that you want to see in every secondary school? And if the truth be told, perhaps even national schools. I know there might be policies out there, and it varies from school to school. But I also know that they have access to their phones at times when they shouldn't be texting people who are at work. But anyway, there you go. What do you think? 0860 25000. I think it takes a bit of pressure off parents and guardians there. Okay, so there are a few roads around Donegal, quite a few roads as well, that sort of become de facto bypasses, you know, where people try and avoid traffic queues or what have you, and they become really quite busy roads with a lot of traffic. And one such road is the Leck Road in Letterkenny, and one local resident there is Kathleen Crossan, who joins us now. Hiya, Kathleen.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm okay. Right, so the Leck Road, who uses it? Is people really trying to avoid maybe work on the four lanes or maybe to avoid going through Letterkenny itself if they're heading out, I don't know, the Glenties Road or what have you? Is that the type of traffic you see on that road?
Well, maybe the four lanes repair, maybe that might be contributing to it, but it's always been bad.
Yeah.
And now it's a lot worse. The traffic are coming and the speed... We can hardly get out the gate days, and some of my family can't even, if they're coming from work down this way, they can't even stop and come in. It's so busy.
Really?
So, and we have been looking for ramps for approximately 2 to 3 years, and there were all sorts of excuses made. There was emergency services couldn't use it and things like that. So I don't know.
Yeah. Now, just as it relates to your property, your husband had a lucky escape recently, didn't he?
He did indeed. He did indeed. If he had been out on the road, it would have been goodbye, Malachy.
Mm.
Because somebody can speed, and they had the cone at the... There's a yellow line, and he had the cone at the yellow line, and he was in trimming the... be good luck if it's on the garden, some in the hedge, and somebody came flying up, sent the cone flying, three different parts scattered on the road. So, I mean, it's near misses all the time here, Greg.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Donald Coyle, in fairness, came and he sat in our street one day and he knows what it's like.
Too, you know, I mean, I would say, Kathleen, for you and other residents on the area, it's not a case of if something happens, it's when it happens or when will it happen.
Exactly.
And that's why you're sort of saying, look, be warned, we're telling you something's going to happen seriously here if something is not done. That's the desperation you're at now.
That is true, Greg. And that's what I told the engineer. I said, it's too late when something happens, get something done now. But we're still waiting. There were engineers out here yesterday, but we didn't see them. I didn't see them. So I'm not just sure what they were measuring for. I don't know.
Could you go out for a walk on the road? Do you feel safe? Could you do that?
Yes, I used to walk on the road, but now I have to wait to maybe 7 or 8 o'clock until it, you know, gets a bit quieter. You couldn't walk down the road now at all during the day because they're coming speeding. And when you go down a bit, we have a footpath right enough, but between my house and the footpath, it's narrow. Well, it's fairly narrow, you know, and the coming speeding up, and they wouldn't even slow down meeting you. You have to step into the hedge. Mm. And my friend down the road, she'll not visit me now because she's too nervous of the traffic. Yeah.
And you see, if the truth be told, it's probably more likely to be impatient drivers that are using that road because they're trying to avoid any delays. And if they're inclined to be impatient, they're not going to worry about poor Kathleen out for a walk, are they? They're just going to keep the foot down.
That's right. You are right.
Who's Molly?
100%. Pardon?
Who's Molly?
Molly is my mascot at the gate here. She just to see would they slow down. Maybe the one might slow down. Somebody told me one day they stopped it to let her across the road, but after that. When they realised she wasn't going to move, they went on.
I don't know if that driver should be driving if they stopped to let Molly cross the road. But it serves two purposes, doesn't it? It highlights the campaign, but also, as you say, Molly's a mannequin there wearing a high-vid vest and a cap, and if someone thinks it's a guard, maybe they'll think twice and take the foot off the accelerator.
That's right. Well, so, you'd hope that.
Yeah, so as soon as, say, there's an announcement of a bank holiday weekend, they're closing one lane on the four lanes, or coming up to the rally weekend, a lot of people are going, oh, it's going to be a nightmare getting around. You're thinking it's going to be a nightmare because we're going to see even more traffic passing the front gates.
Yeah, that's right. There'll be more traffic on this road. I don't mind traffic during the rally. That's, you know, you can expect that. But when the rally goes again, it's as bad as ever.
Handy way into the town.
It's just a handy way into the town and out.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people use it as a shortcut. And then there's speed signs up here. They put them up maybe last year, but nobody looks at them.
Yeah.
Nobody looks at them.
And it's 60, isn't it, supposedly?
Pardon?
It's supposed to be 60.
It's supposed to be 60, yes. Well, there was somebody caught on it there last week. I was told at 90-something.
Wow.
And that wouldn't be unusual.
That road's not built for that.
No, it's not. Yeah. Certainly not, no.
Right, no. Okay. So you're calling for action here. It's speed ramps is... Because even if there were speed checks, look, that's going to be hit and miss. The guard's resources are stretched as is. You believe that speed ramps are what's required here?
Speed ramps are what is required at our gates and up the road at my son and daughter. They need something up there too.
Yeah.
But definitely speed ramps. They talked about coming and putting up flashing lights, and I told the engineers, I said, it's a waste of money.
No, so I think Molly would be as effective as flashing lights, if the truth be told.
I think so.
Right, okay. I just hope nothing happens because the warning's out there. And I mean, obviously you're speaking to us now, but you've been in the papers and you've been, you know, contacting local councillors and, you know, you've done everything you can anyway, I think, Kathleen, at this point.
We've done everything we can now and we're just waiting now to see what Dermot Doherty came out and done a story on Molly and the traffic. And I see we're in the front page. I didn't read it yet. Is it the Derry People? Yeah.
It's the Donegal News.
Oh, the Donegal News, yeah. Well, it was the Derry People in my day, Greg.
But I mean, I think you're being really realistic here. You understand that it's going to be busier during the rally. You don't mind that, but this is everyday traffic now.
That's right, everyday traffic. You don't mind during the rally, you can excuse that, but it's a everyday traffic before and after that.
Okay. Well, you're on page three.
Page three, isn't it?
That's going back a while, that was something different too, wasn't it? So you've made you've made page three, Kathleen.
I didn't make page three on this. It was at the start.
In the sun. Well, listen, Kathleen, you're obviously a lovely woman from a lovely family, and it's a really, and I'm glad we can have a little laugh, but it is a serious issue, and I do hope,
I do hope
because you're on about safety here, and you want something done before something serious happens, and I appreciate that, and best wishes to, does Maliki have anything he wants to add just before we wrap it up?
No, he's not here at the moment.
Is he not? Okay.
He's away from... No.
Right, okay. Okay, no problem. All right, okay. Thanks for that, Kathleen. Best wishes to you and all, okay? Thanks. Take care. Kathleen Crossan there, resident on the Leck Road in Letterkenny. And as you can see, or as you can hear there... I'll show you the picture if for those of you who are watching the show. And don't forget, you can watch the program every day on you can watch the show every day on our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland. And for those of you who are watching, there is the family in the paper this morning. And there's Molly there. There she is. All right, 0866 25,000. If you live on that road and want to join that conversation, I think the more of you that speak out, the stronger the argument from Kathleen becomes. So 0866 25,000. Okay, Dr. Joe Kelly, historian and teacher, joins us on the show now. He's got his teacher's cap on. I can see it here on Zoom. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning to yourself and all listening in Highland Radio.
It's great to have you back on the show, Joe. Right, we're going to talk about the exams that are running at the moment. We'll start with the Leaving Cert. And there was a big hoo-ha about a recent maths paper. A lot of students saying that they couldn't work it out because they hadn't revised for it. What happened, Joe?
Yeah, well, I'm not a maths teacher, but I'd be aware of what has happened. And I have colleagues that are teachers in that subject, and I would have listened to them. But clearly what happened was in the paper, they set a lot of questions at the end of each question that were through the students. It was like a curveball. And it meant that they had to think differently about how they approach the answer. And there was a terrible lot of fractions, from what I understand, which is okay if somebody is good at fractions, but fractions should only be a section of the paper like everything else. So there seem to be a lot of fractions throughout the paper. And the issue really isn't so much that. The issue is the upset that it caused. Because a lot of students, I think this was on the 9th of June, right at the beginning of the Leaving Cert, the feast of Colum Killa, our own county man. And it set them to the point that many, I wouldn't imagine anybody from who I've listened to had left that paper feeling confident that they had done well. So their confidence then was hit. And this had an impact, as far as I'm concerned, into all the further subjects that were to follow. So much so that maybe they focused very heavily then on paper two in maths, to the exclusion of Irish, which would have been on the same time. So I think it asks, there's a serious question to be asked about what was going on with the State's Examination Commission in setting a paper like this, and to consider that this was the COVID year. This is the year that didn't do the junior cert. This is the year that has missed a lot of class-based time. And to do something like that, I think was totally insensitive and calls into question what really is going on at a wider level to in our education system. Think of this, Greg. They have a system now in place in our Department of Education Advisors. They want 400 hours of well-being in junior cert. Now, I'm not a fan of the phrase well-being. I prefer the word being well. And it means a totally, for me personally, a totally different thing. How do we make our students be well? Well-being has become only a buzzword and everything's well-being, but how do you be well? We're human beings. You know, we're not human doings. And for the 400 hours that these students would have done of well-being, this is how they're treated at the end of that. it merely seems to me to be a social exercise and ticking the boxes. We're doing the well-being, but you know what? We'll throw you a curveball at the end of all your well-being. Yeah.
What concerns me is the lack of understanding in that it was mitigated by saying, well, we have this curve, bell curve, and it will take into consideration and blah. But the stress, the damage has been done, the stress has been done. And my understanding too, that's providing answers where all questions and attempt was made at an answer that they might better benefit from this marking system. So the fact that that was thrown out as if to say, don't worry about that a couple of days later, it doesn't talk to what you're talking about, the stress and the impact it has on subsequent exams. And also it really hasn't been discussed that you really need to have made a decent stab at all of the questions, which a lot of students didn't know this in advance and would have looked at this paper and went, I don't know what I'm doing here.
Yeah, and then they may have not tried to answer the question because their confidence have been shot. Again, this is like we're dealing with young men and young women that we're trying to form to be the future leaders and parents of our society, the future problem solvers. And I don't know if we approached with this kind of exam paper, we approached this properly. And it calls, as far as I'm concerned, it calls, and I've been saying this before, Greg, it calls into the whole philosophy of education. What is education about? What are we doing for the benefit of our children? And again, I think parents maybe this time realize that it impacts on them and their little boy and little girl that are grown man or woman at this stage during the evening. That it's not, you know, you drop your kids off at the school. Schools do their best, but schools are only part of a very big body of people. Like there's the State Examination Commission, there's the National Council for Curriculum Assessment, NCCA, then there's the Inspectorate, then there's the Department of Education, then there's the Minister, then there's the politicians, then you have teachers, unions. I mean, there's so many various bodies involved in a school situation. And like our philosophy of education, and I imagine it's in every school, is to try to encourage the students to be as alive and to open like a flower in the sun in the lovely weather we're having. And we should try to facilitate that in every way. So, but education is also a very serious matter.
Yes, of course. We only have another couple of minutes and I want to talk to you about the Junior Cert because you've concerns about the new Junior Cert, don't you? And we could be talking in 2 to 3 years' time or 4 years' time about the impact this new Junior Cert might be having on Leaving Cert students as well. So as I say, sorry to be moving this along, but what is the problem you have with the JCT?
Well, I think we've dumbed down our whole education system, and it's becoming. I mean, I would encourage parents go look at the Junior Cert history paper, and again about well-being. They had roughly 25 pages to write in 2 hours. It's no longer ordinary and higher. It's now a common paper. Any adult human being would struggle to do that in that amount of time. And I'll just give an example of some of the stuff that's in it. There was two pictures, a Camogie game from 1915 and 2019. So one coloured, one black and white. And one was dated to 1915, the other was dated 2019. And one of the questions was, how many years between the two pictures? I mean, this is the kind of stuff that's coming up. Explain three differences between the two pictures. So, for example, the modern one, they would have been wearing jerseys, helmets, as where the old one, it was maybe long skirts and no helmets and things like that. This is nothing to do with history, but this is what we're putting maths into history.
Why are they doing it? Why? It's for a reason.
Well, I don't know. There was another question seven on the Troubles in Northern Ireland, and they had two tables. And they asked one, how many civilians were killed in the Troubles in Northern Ireland? And there's different graphs. And the answer was 1840. And then the other one was how many civilians were killed by the Royalist and Republican paramilitaries? And you just had to add the two numbers.
But does that not make you understand the history by doing an equation? Is there not a logic there?
It may well be, but like, you don't need an equation to know those numbers.
Yeah, I get
those
you. No,
things
would
have been taught in class. You don't need to be doing maths.
But there's a reason why it's happening. Is it because, is it to be more accommodating to people who might not have done for, national school here or?
Well, I mean, in that case, then continue with the honours and the ordinary.
Could it be? I don't know.
I don't know the answer behind it myself. My own belief is I think that they're trying actually to dumb down the Irish people so that they don't think for themselves. A lot of our education, and it's not about the schools. The schools are living bodies that are trying their best, management, teachers, etc. But there's a curriculum and there's agendas being used by unelected people that are deciding what goes into our curriculum and how it's been formed. And I just wonder how much is actually coming from the people themselves. And I would be concerned if that's the level our history is going to, and other subjects are the same. Where are we leading our students with education? Are we giving them the critical skills to evaluate and be problem solvers? One of the great scholars of education would be Cardinal Henry Newman. He was a convert, and he was always into a liberal education where he didn't want cancel culture. He didn't want an agenda culture. He talked about where you had an open view on everything and that you were challenged to think. And I wonder, has our education system been drained of that?
You always drop a bombshell just as we're ending, but I don't think anyone agrees that spot the difference competitions and basic subtraction are what history is all about. And I'll tell you what we'll do, Joe. We'll revisit this conversation in a longer format and get our listeners more involved, because I'll tell you, a lot of parents and guardians out there are learning this type of information for the first time, because how else do they know it?
It's no longer acceptable. I think, for parents, and they have to maybe put on their thinking hearts, and it's not the schools or the teachers, that you drop your kids at the front door of the school and believe then that they're going to be educated when they come back out. You need to be more informed as to how they're being educated, what are they being educated with. And this is not about teachers and schools, because we're doing our best.
We're going to come back to it. Thanks, Joe. As always, thank you so very much indeed. Dr. Joe Kelly, Food for Thought. 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts to have your say on that. As I say, I think that's an education for a lot of us, hearing that kind of information for the first time today.